And she didn't have
Okay, I'm just going to test the audio. Can everyone online hear me?
She felt she could. And she
Yes,
was like,
I could hear you. Can you hear me?
yes, we can hear you. Perfect.
Perfect.
Sarah, did you want to test your audio?
You want me to test audio?
Sound perfect.
Perfect.
Excellent. Okay, I think we are. Here, I should put this down. There we go. Okay, I think we are ready to get started. Thank you all for joining me here today at the last session of WolfCon for a presentation I am really excited about called Designing User Accounts: How Users Place Holds, Renew Books, and Do Other Folio Activities in Different Discovery Environments. And I am Nicole Trujillo. I'm from the University of Colorado Boulder, and I am delighted to be joined today by three exceptional libraries. Those libraries are going to be Chalmers University with Marie Vigitson, who will be presenting, Joseph Molloy at Spokane Public Library, and Sarah Seastone at Stanford University Libraries. I believe Corey is here as well. And today we're going to be talking to you about user accounts. Like, how do your users, your patrons, interact with your library and therefore with your Folio system and its many components? What do you consider highly desirable patron information? How do you display that? How do you make requests and design that request process in a way that is easy and intuitive for your users? We're also going to talk about some fun integrations with third-party user services. And because each of these libraries are unique and have unique discovery environments, each of their solutions are going to be a little bit different and hopefully applicable to your own discovery environment at your own organization. Before we begin, I just wanted to give a brief overview of how that user-facing discovery works with Folio. So since Folio is open source, in order to make this work with as many products as it can, discovery is mainly done by API calls. So this is not a technical diagram. This is just a very high concept of what sits between the Folio apps and discovery. And I just want to note that that's not all that sits between the apps and discovery. There are also middle layers and indexing processes, depending on whatever discovery environment you are a part of. So without further ado, I will turn it over to Chalmers and Marie to talk about what Chalmers does for their patrons.
Thank you, Nicole. First, can you hear me all?
Yeah, we can hear you. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes, my name is Marie Widriksson, and I'm from Chalmers in Gothenburg, Sweden. We consider ourselves to be kind of small mid-size library. We have one main library and four smaller branch libraries. We have quite a lot of students, and we also have quite a lot of general public users. We are e-resource heavy, but this presentation is on print, and we have that, of course, as well. Next, please. So we are EBSCO hosted. We have Folio with EDS, EBSCO Discovery System, and everything else included in this package, such as knowledge base, etc. We are a library that is open for the general public, and we have EDS in guest mode. That's very important for us to be not to trigger login when that's not necessary, only when needed. Requests are also important, of course. We allow page requests, meaning that the patron can request something that is available on shelf. And we have a recall policy, so the patron gets a long loan period, and that can be shortened if someone else wants the book. And we have several copies of high demand books and course literatures. So therefore, title level requesting is very important for us. And so it's the first available copy should be for the student then comes first. And in Sweden, it's not very common with course reserves, so we are not using that. Next. We have EDS as our only front end for Folio, so we don't have any other OPAC such as Locate or so. And the goal is, of course, that the user should be able to manage on their own and not get lost in between interfaces. That was kind of our previous experience. We went live with the Folio back in 2019, and then we had the classic EDS. And to be honest, it has been quite kind of a struggle since EDS was not built for this kind of user accounts and certainly not for Folio. So as soon as this was possible with the patron functionality, we started using the new EDS last summer. And here we use a lot of the built-in settings. Next, please. And the settings are administered in EBSCO's old and new admin site. And you will see a lot of screenshots from mostly the new one, EBSCO configuration throughout the presentation. Next, please. So first of all, how does the user log into the user account? Well, of course, through the library web and links in patron notices, etc. It may be obvious, but that was actually not possible with the classic EDS, but it is now, so we are much happier now. They can also log in the process of, for example, placing a request. And in the EDS interface through the guest access banner that is on the top of the page. So when you are logged in, the My Dashboard entry to the left expands and the request and loans part becomes visible. And you see up in the right corner, there's a tiny icon. That's the My EBSCO icon. It's not used for login. And I will get back to that later. Next. So when a user is logged in, they see the user account consisting of three tabs, which you can disable or enable as you want. We have decided to call this part requests and loans. You can also choose holds and checkouts, and that is reflected throughout the user experience. Next. So the first tab is the requests tab, and here, of course, you can see your request, your place in line, if the book is ready for pickup, and you can remove your request. You cannot see where to pick up the book, and you cannot see when you have to do it the last day. So we need to rely on our patron notices for this information. And next, and the loans page. Of course, you can see your loans, if they are overdue or not, the expiry date. You can renew them, you do that one by one. So you get a success or an error message. Next. And there is also a fee tab. It's only information and no action possible here. And next. So now we are instead at the result list. So I have searched for a book and get a book with that has quite a lot of copies, and this is a test book, so most books, well, most records doesn't look this messy. But what I would like to show you here is the possibility to map the folio item statuses to what is displayed in this table, the ARTAC table. So the folio, this to the right, you have the experience manager, and we can say the ILS value, that's the folio value. And we can map, for example, well, available is mapped to available in EDS. But the next one in process is, we have called it available in back office. And we can go further down, checked out is on loan, etc. So you can map that for all your supported languages. And we find this very neat to do that. Then you can also choose how to sort them. There are some possibilities. We have chosen to sort them by availability, meaning that the green icons is on top, etc. And then the it's in alphabetical order. I think this setting is one of the settings that are only possible for EBSCO folio customers hosted by EBSCO, at least for now. You can jump to the next page, please. Another column here is a loan type. And that's also that's directly from folio, so it's not mapped. You can choose whether you want to display it or not. And we have tried to work with the namings of the loan types in folio to get them to be helpful for the user. It's a bit tricky, but we have tried because we would like to show if something is not requestable, for example, here on the loan time. Next, please. There is a setting for the dates, and you can have the due date shown or not, and you can also include a timestamp if you want. A fairly recent setting is that you can default to a specific region, and that makes the date format follow. So that's very good for us in Sweden because we really don't understand the American date format. We would like to have it this way. So it's an improvement for us. Next, please. In the experience manager, EBSCO admin page, there are some settings for handling of requests. We, for example, we have we require the patron to select a pick application. Otherwise, everything would be defaulted to the architecture library starting at A. We don't allow patron comments, but it's possible to do so. And we don't allow the selection of a specific copy. We could have first available copy and the possibility to select a specific item, but we have found that this confuses the requester, and they may select a copy that will in fact be returned later, so they will not get the first copy in queue. So we have disabled that. Next, please. So this is the normal flow for a request. You click on place request, you sign in, you choose your pickup location, and then you get the success toast where you can see your place in line. You don't see it before that, or an error message. And next. Well, there are some statuses in folio that is not requestable. And this is an aged lost book. We have called it on loan overdue. And in these cases, EDS doesn't display any request button at all. Next. This one is a trickier thing, the non-requestable loan types, because that's, of course, a circulation policy thing. Here the place request button is always visible. We try to indicate by the loan type that it's not requestable, but the patron can do it anyway. There is a setting in the Folio to fail to create a title level hold in these cases, but that's we think that's a bad user experience because they go all the way and then they get an error message. Instead, we try to inform the patron using our emailed notices what is happening and how to proceed. Yeah, serials, it's also always interesting. We're happy for the holding statements. We don't have items for many of our serials, so we have a request volume issue button instead. That's in fact a custom link that goes to a web form where the user can fill in a specific issue or whole year or whatever they want. We take care of it. And in the next slide, there is a case where we do have items. So here we have both the request volume issue, fine, but we also have the normal place request. But since we have disabled the item choice, this means that it will be a random issue requested, a title level request. And the good thing is that this almost never happens. A little bit about creating library accounts. We have an in-house developed software for creating accounts. We don't load the data from Chalmers Institution because we don't want to have more users in Folio than we actually need, because since it's only for print circulation. But if they have a Chalmers ID, everything is pre-filled and they can do everything directly. The general public gets a form to fill in, not too much, but only things that we need. And there is a block and we look at their ID and then they can borrow. Next slide is showing what happens when the user actually log in. Here, Open Athens comes into the picture. It's the one page, but depending on which type of user you are, you go different paths, but you both end up in check in Open Athens. Of course, nothing that the user sees, but that's where it's managed, and then they can do their renewals, etc., when they are authenticated there. And I have been talking a lot about settings and out-of-box things, but we do have some really nice in-house developed stuff as well. We have a software for interlibrary loans, and that is integrated with Folio. And so the circulation is taken care of in Folio and shown in EDS. And also the account creation has a pin reset part. So that's neat. And this is our wish list. On top of this, it's the confusion with my EBSCO and Folio library account. So we this small tiny icon on the top right, if the user clicks there, they can change their email address, but that's actually not changed in the library account, which they probably think, instead only in the my EBSCO. So we can send out all the notices to another email and they think they have changed too. So that's not very good. There are some things about around requests, like have a custom order of the pickup locations, be able to hide them, see the number of requests before you place them, and to be able to configure our error messages ourselves, because it's tricky to have something that suits everyone. And of course, we would like renewables in bulk. We have talked a lot about these things with EBSCO, so we have good hopes for the future. And thank you. I think there is not so many of us that have these setups with Folio and EDS as our only front end. So if there is anyone out there having that as well, please contact me. It would be super nice to talk to you. So with that, I think I will hand over to you at Spokane.
Good afternoon, everybody.
No,
thank you, thank you. My name is Joseph Malloy with the Spokane Public Library with View, Find, Discovery that is anything from out of the box. We've been on Folio since 2020. That was everyone's favorite year. And we were faced with some major challenges when it came to service and feature offerings on our catalog. It was only after we were able to get our feet under ourselves, which is still a work in progress, that we were able to turn our attention to enhancing our community partnerships and working on patron empowerment. So we have a number of partners across the city of Spokane. And the question that you might ask is, what does it mean to be a community partner with the Spokane Public Library? Easy, instant access to a physical and digital borrowing is one thing. Leveraging a single sign-on with custom OIDC service, staff and students from partner organizations can simply click their link and using their institution's cloud-connected account be instantly signed into the catalog. For their first login, the process will prompt them to enter some basic user account information, name, address, email, preferred pickup location, and set a PIN. Thereafter, they're automatically signed in. The menu option featured on the side of our account provides information relevant to the patron at a glance, including the number of currently checked out versus overdue items, pending or available requests, outstanding fines on their account, as well as if they've signed a waiver of liability to check out from our Library of Things collection. While some users may not need to use their barcode and PIN to sign into our catalog, they will need it for everything else. Our profile page showcases a digital library card to retrieve their card number, since some of these patrons may never step foot inside a physical branch. So for everyone else, they can use this to simply scan on our self-checks or on our public computers with their handheld devices. So you remember that Library of Things waiver mentioned earlier? This correlates to a custom field on the user record in Folio that staff verify during checkout at a service desk for our Library of Things materials. So before we had title level requests set up, we actually had to remove torches and pitchforks from our collection because the patrons are preparing to storm the buildings. So reviewing checkout and checked out items functions just as one would expect. We surface the due dates of the materials and offer patrons the ability to renew all of their an item individually or in bulk. For requests, our institution runs with mod notice disabled. So we send digest notifications through Patron Point that simply directs our patrons to log into their account and review the item status, where it is, ready for pickup. And we surface all the information, including queue position and expiration. That is pickup expiration. The idea here is to enhance the catalog to provide any and all relevant information to the patron for simple self-service. Everyone has opinions about time, you know, what day is zero on. And so we chose to represent the last day of an expiration date as pickup through said date, which definitely reduced the number of angry calls from customers saying, I went there and my hold was expired on the hold shelf. So other important features such as bill pay and meeting room reservations, these are handled outside the catalog, but they're all connected through SIP and somewhat surfaced here. Overdrive is just a link out to the patron's Overdrive profile. We're also in partnership with Solus, who are currently developing a fully supported, Folio-enabled catalog app for iOS and Android, which will also feature meeting room reservations, integrations, fine payments, all within their single platform without the use of SIP. So we're always trying to do something new and creative at SPL. And many libraries are already offering 3D printing services to their patrons. So innovating on this idea, Spokane Public decided to empower our patrons to take advantage of this service directly in their catalog. We built a custom ViewFind module, enabling users to submit and track print requests without staff intervention. Now, we can't have 3D printed objects going to self-registered, that's our unverified patron group, or to any of our automated kiosks. To handle viable pickup locations, we actually created an item record in Folio inventory and then applied circulation rules to it that are so only appropriate patron and pickup location combinations could be selected from the drop-down menu. Staff then managed these requests with our internal dashboard, and printed items are routed throughout our branch systems with all of our regular materials. So all of this is fine and well, but what about regular material requests? Most users will actually start on our catalog landing page. This features a dynamic list of new material cover art. This is filtered by material type, and all of our new materials are creatively prefixed with new in the name. Patrons can explore each of these material types and find what is interesting to them. Let's say they don't find anything interesting in new materials. Of course, the general search is next. On our catalog, the goal is to showcase all the information that matters most right on those results, to simplify finding what a patron needs in order to for them to make a decision. Because we also maintain the Spokane Public School collection as well, we surface both the call number prefix and the call number on the result so that school locations can genrefy their physical material layout in their branch. And this empowers the students with in-branch wayfinding as they're doing a quick search on the catalog. Filtering by location, or if the title is an ebook or a physical copy, are both big win features for our patrons. Overdrive, LinkedIn Learning, and Canopy offerings are all featured on the search results page as well. The legend featured at the top of the page shows patrons the live status of what each icon means when reviewing the locations of the materials so that they can take immediate action, either at home or in the branch. The results page comes with four primary calls to action. I'm gonna minimize Marie here. Sorry about that, Marie, you're going away. So the patron can view digital materials online, request a particular copy, place a title level request, or walk in and snag an available copy right off the shelf. So a little bit of background. Title level requests had to be the most sought after and complained about feature when we migrated to Folio 4 years ago. And for 4 years, our patrons muddled through item level requests with great frustration, and they let us know. So in 2024, SPL implemented both item and title level requests on materials. But without a native identifier in Folio's instant records to differentiate an item level request versus a title level request, we implemented a method where all item level titles would have a 590 tag in the MARC record, and an 856 tag is added to all of our side-loaded online-only digital MARC records. As a side note, while working with Solus on their development and explaining to them how to identify these differences, they remarked that no ILS that they have ever worked with had one authoritative flag or key on a bib record to indicate what should be an item level request. So managed by catalogers in our situation or any, this flag could be pretty valuable to discovery layers who might need to leverage that. I haven't seen a JIRA for it yet, but this could be something that the community considers. So back to this. Checking these tags makes it straightforward on how to present that call to action on the various materials that we have on the catalog. And it's super simple.
until you have to account for restricted, unavailable, or otherwise unrequestable materials. We could let the patron just click place a hold and have it fail with some really ugly looking API response. Or we could choose not to show them the button at all, providing a better user experience. The following logic waterfall builds an array and determines whether or not we need to show the patron the button at all. Now, I'm not a big fan of reading my slides back to you, but you can see here that there are some unique conditions that we need to verify before we even choose to show this button. What I can say is that a lot of time and effort went into developing this feature for our patrons. And while this feature may just be a button to most people who see it, the underlying code that makes for a positive user experience is critically important. So now we have reached in our journey to the point where we're ready to place a hold, almost. During the modal pop-up when placing a request, all the item statuses are verified against live Folio data. We do this because up until this point, all the data used was just to determine whether or not to show the button, most of which is derived from Mark view and likely delayed. If there are no viable items to fulfill the hold request or circulation rules are restricting the patron, item, or loan type combination, a graceful error, as showcased, will appear for the patron rather than submitting a doomed to fail API request and rendering an error. This is the check of last resort that is greatly appreciated by our patrons. For item level requests, where a patron wants to select their desired copy, we showcase enumeration and chronology and enable them to pick the particular item that they need. Much of the logic for this button is the same, with, of course, the exception of the particular API call being made for item level as opposed to title level. So you may have noticed that I like slides, and a picture is worth 1,000 words. And so with the little videos, it's kind of fun, but I've learned my lesson never to do a live demo ever again. So on that note, I didn't know how long this would take and how much I would rattle off. So I wanted to quickly showcase a few final features and decisions that we had to make. Self-service pin reset was a frequently requested feature from our patrons and our staff. We built this empowerment to mitigate the number of please reset my PIN calls to staff, and it was widely successful. We also chose to leverage UserWay, which we use on all of our websites as well, which is a product that offers digital accessibility services in compliance with our state and local laws. Our patrons are incredibly pleased with the work that we've done on our catalog. New materials, title level requests, PIN reset, 3D printed services, and everything they need right featured right in their user profile, all while we're surfacing as much meaningful information directly on that results page. Altogether, we offer quick and streamlined actions to get them what they need and when they need it. So what's next for us? Our wish list is to build an app in Folio called Wishlist that patron that will ingest and it will be a workflow tool that will ingest, manage, fulfill, and surface both patron-driven acquisitions as well as new material requests for library users. Adding a wish list feature to the catalog for the titles that they want but we don't have yet is something that they have that has been widely requested. So this is a big win for public libraries and interested in Folio, and I'm hopeful that we can get this application endorsed. So who knows, maybe there'll be a WolfCon presentation on it next year. We will see. But really, public library patrons are the stakeholders in our organization, and they're the driving force behind where and what we improve. And by the way, while we're waiting for Wishlist, this UX Prod 3567, tell all of your friends, you want this feature. Even if you don't think you want it, you need to go request this feature, okay? Thank you everybody for your time.
right. I'm going to take that quiet as a clue that it's my turn.
Okay.
No worries. Hello, everyone. My name is Sarah Seastone, and I'm the product and service manager for SearchWorks, which is the library catalog for Stanford University Libraries. As we were going through what to cover today and how much time we'd have to cover it, Corey and I looked over and decided to focus in on just the services. So I'll be doing the presentation alone, but we'll have contact information at the end if developer types have questions for Corey about how we achieve all of this. Next slide. Okay. So, some Stanford facts, just a little bit about us. I think you can boil this slide down to we have a lot of people and a large geographic area. I only included the large campus. We have a huge physical campus, but we also have satellite campuses in other places and in other cities. So we're doing a lot of paging. 20 plus libraries. We have a couple of brick and mortar that are devoted to be libraries, but we have a lot of department libraries that are embedded in department buildings. We have a high density storage facility that is quite a ways from campus, and we do daily deliveries. But it really ensure it makes sure that we need to have a robust request environment. Next slide. Some Folio facts. I think what's most interesting maybe on this slide is that we are self-hosted. And so that means that our discovery systems have direct access to the database. Most discovery systems have to rely on APIs that are available. We do not. So that will be exposed in slides to come. The other thing that might be of interest is that we are single tenant, but we have five organizational entities. So there's the Stanford University Libraries, which has covers most of those libraries, but we have administrative independence for our law library, business, medical library. And so, but we're all in a single tenant. And so we do a lot of communicating and negotiating around settings. I didn't add to the slide, but our medical library actually has its own discovery environment. And so we actually have two discovery environments running off of the Stanford Folio database. Next slide. I'm going to focus on SearchWorks, though. That is the library catalog for the vast majority of the libraries at Stanford. We are Blacklight based. We have a lot of custom applications that are coming off of that Blacklight environment. We have a requests application, a course reserves catalog, and a My Library account. We do a lot of indexing, and this indexing will come into play. That is not just indexing of holdings data, which we do kind of every 5 minutes. We do a lot of immediate updates or as close as we can to immediate and still have good performance. But we do a full re-index every weekend, and part of that full re-index is to update settings so that we're getting up-to-date settings. And again, you'll see why in a little bit. We do use RTAC for live availability in our discovery layer, as others have mentioned. And because EDS has come up with Marie, we do use EDS, but it is for all Articles Plus only. We connect via API. We have our own user interface to expose Articles Plus, and it doesn't have any relationship to Folio. So, next slide. Okay, now let's get into the gritty details. And apologies if in the room this slide is hard to see because there's small font. But this is a simple catalog record, a standard catalog record, run-of-the-mill, you might even call it. Along the left-hand side is the metadata that we're surfacing from Folio. In the middle there, we've got some tools and a book cover. And along the right-hand side, we have availability. And I'm going to be spending most of my time on that availability section. One click, Nicole. So I mentioned that we're relying on Folio settings. So in a clockwise way, maybe starting with our holdings statement, as Marie mentioned, I noticed she had a slide where she's showing holding statements. We also expose holding statements, but we have a wide variety of holding statements. Sometimes they're really nice and concise and short and small, and sometimes they're really, really long and can be hard to parse. We used to display them on screen. Now we've put them behind a click, but we do expose them both to the staff and the users in the catalog. Coming around the clock there, we have request buttons, and in this particular example, we have two different types. We have requests that are managed using Aeon, which is a special collections inventory and availability system, and then requests that are run out of Folio. We are utilizing Folio circulation rules actually to determine whether request buttons display and what they look like. And of course, AirPods just died. So hopefully you can still hear me. Can you still hear me?
We still hear you. Yeah.
Okay, I switched quickly. We're also using location details. That's in the tenant settings to help drive some of the behavior behind request buttons, and I'll go into details around that in a minute. As others have shown, we also expose item status. That's the check mark and available. If you can see it, it's small in green there. We also expose loan type, not all the time, but if it's notable or if we need the users to pay attention to it, in this particular example, the items are only available for in-library use. Marie note mentioned that she'd spend a lot of time making sure that those labels are nice and tidy and user understandable. We actually translate them in our discovery system. Next slide. This is a different record. Seeing Silicon Valley has a lot of the same elements, but along that right-hand side, one click, Nicole. We're exposing that they're in, we're pulling the courses data. So this item is on course reserves, and we're exposing that information at the top there. Again, we're showing item status, and we are translating that loan type. That one feels particularly important. If a faculty member checks this item out, normally it goes out for a year. That's really different than a 2-hour loan when the material is set aside for a course. Even for faculty members, they only get 2 hours. Next slide. This is a fairly interesting catalog record if you know what to look for. I'm going to draw your attention to that availability panel at one click, Nicole. This item is a bound width. Stanford has a lot of bound widths, actually. And if you know, you know, I think, on this one. This is a bound width child record, and our metadata department has done tremendous work along with support from library systems to create that formal relationship of bound width in Folio to help us manage these particular records. These are very, very hard in discovery. Anybody who has them knows how hard they are to manage in discovery. It's really hard to help the user understand that this item is in the middle of a different record or of a different title. This particular example is part of a series, so we at least have a subject relationship between the titles. But we have plenty of material with no subject relationship. Just in the 1970s, the books came in and they were small and they were the same size. And so somebody thought it was a grand idea to bind them all together. No end of trouble that has produced in online discovery systems going forward. So what we're doing is trying to leverage that bound width relationship. We're showing that scrub Aspen control, if you can read it, is the principal record. And we give a hyperlink to the user to go ahead and see that principal record if they want to. If you can go ahead and click. So now that users clicked that hyperlink, they are in the bound width principal record now, and the display changes again. Instead, now they get a hyperlink where they can see all the items that are bound in this particular physical volume. One more click, Nicole. So it opens up a modal and you get the full list of titles. So this is super helpful when those titles relate subjectly, right? Maybe the person who's interested in scrub aspen control is also really into the local spread of oak wilt. I don't know. But it makes sense to do this when they're related subjectly, but also to help the user understand if they've requested one title and they physically receive a book with a different title. It helps us in the request application. We can surface really similar information and help the user understand that they're going to receive a book with a different title. Next slide. So some of the features that I've mentioned around availability and information that we're pulling out of Folio, I don't think I mentioned, we are creating this latest label, and we do that by logically going through enumeration and chronology and trying to determine the last serial that was checked in, and then we surface it here. I think if Stanford had something on its wish list, it would be that this was something we didn't have to try to parse using through enumeration and chronology, that instead Folio would give us a field based on what serial was the last one that got checked in, but that would be our wish list. But here's some other things that that we do in availability. And rely on Folio data. Next slide. So switching gears a little bit, we have a feature called Librarian View that we've had for a really long time. I mean, it's hard to see in the visual here on the right, but it because it's behind the modal, but it's a hyperlink at the bottom of all of our catalog records. And what it does is give a whole lot of librarian type of information to the staff. You might wonder why this is needed. We have staff in Special Collections in particular who might not have access to Folio. We have guests, people who are creating finding aids because they have a language ability, or someone who has maybe a less than formal relationship with the Stanford University libraries on staff. And they need to have information sometimes out of Folio that with no permissions access to Folio. And so what we do is give them some features here. One click, Nicole. This one in particular was requested specifically from Special Collections. What we're doing is parsing the permanent location from Folio and the effective location. Then it gives us some options in our display to push the fact that this item is on exhibit in music, and that's what matters to the user. But to the staff, something else might matter. And we do this in part for the people who don't have Folio access but need the information, or it is really hard to get in Folio. Our Special Collections records sometimes have hundreds of items in the holdings, and it you can't If you're looking for a barcode really quickly, it's hard to find in the Folio UI. It's a little easier if they go here, open item details, and do a control find. You can find it a lot faster. Also, you're seeing a nod to the JSON for our technical staff if they need some of the information on how the two systems are talking to each other, the discovery system and the Folio. Our library systems group and others who are tech types use the JSON a lot. Next click. We also expose our circulation rules here, and that is because I mentioned that our reserve or our request button is managed by circulation rules. So what we do is give the staff a little nod to which circulation rule is being governed by this particular item. Our circulation rules are managed by material type, and then and there's a lot of them. I mentioned that there's five of us, and so our circulation rule map it's long. And this gives the staff some information about what might be going on, about why a request button is showing or not showing, and why it's behaving the way it is. Next click. So switching gears a little bit about our request service. We have a robust paging service. This image is from that high density storage facility. So we do a lot of paging. We also do allow holds and recalls on materials that are not available. We have resource sharing partnerships through Borrow Direct and certainly with ILL. So we have that hold recall. You're going to see that we have this developed wait for Stanford copy. In our request forms, we heard from a lot of staff, but I would say a couple of users as well, who are saying, please don't assume that we want the item just as fast as you can get it, and you fly a book from the East Coast to the West Coast where Stanford is. Instead, I just want to wait for the Stanford copy because I just heard about this on a podcast and I just want to read it when it comes available. So that is a feature that is directly based on user feedback, that they wanted an option of just we want the Stanford copy versus us deciding the best method to obtain that physical book for them. We also have a scanned PDF service. Next slide. I mentioned the request app and the circulation rules governing whether requests appear. Here's just a little snippet. That is also we're utilizing what user group they're in. So that first line is the default line. Most people are allowed to request it, but we do have a particular purchased group where the requests won't be allowed. This means that we don't have to build that array that Joe was talking about. We're really just utilizing what Folio says. That gives us two benefits. One is we don't have to do that extra logic, but the second is that the circulation managers actually have management of whether or not an item should be requestable. We also lean on the Folio settings in tenant in the location settings. And I mentioned some of the behaviors behind requesting whether what system to divert it to, what type of request button it should be. And this is a little encoded, but that top one, availability class, means that we should use a truck icon instead of a check mark. It might have controls like this material in this particular location should only be picked up at special collections, so we can manage that. And then that third specification is that if the item, if we're scanning a portion of it, which service point it should be directed to do that scanning. Next up. Okay, so here's our request form. I've already been through a lot of it. You can see that we're surfacing that wait list. There is no wait list on this particular item, but users can see if there is a wait list. As well as item status, they get pickup locations and that select processing method. Next slide. Very, very quickly, I realize we're getting really close to time and y'all are probably getting anxious to get going. But let me finish out with My Library account. We do have a custom My Library account. It hasn't been updated in a long time, I'll admit. So when I was coming up with these slides, I was like, ooh, it's time for a visual update on this one. But we do surface checkouts, requests, and fines. That fines option is with a third party payment method. That's a university payment approved method called CyberSource, and we have an integration around payments. Next slide. So things that we surface from Folio in this application, status, whether or not there are open fines and fees. But an interesting one is around renewals. We actually do a whole lot of translating about whether or not the user can renew the item, and we change what is visible. So in this first example, the item has been billed, it is assumed lost, and we really need the user to return it instead of renew it. Versus the second item where they definitely can renew, it's just a few days overdue, and they can go ahead and renew that. Next. In our request tab, they get a whole bunch of information from Folio, but also the ability to change or cancel the request. And this is conditional based on whether or not the item is already been pulled for them and is available versus we're still doing some processing on it. So we utilize a lot of the Folio status and the Folio request status in order to determine what user actions are available here. Next slide. This is just showing that they can change the pickup library when the hold is going to, or request is going to expire, or if they don't need it at all. Next. That's just a window quickly into some of the ways that we're using Folio data in our discovery application. And I mentioned again, Corey and I are happy to answer any questions that you have, but we do realize that we have a bit of a unique situation. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you all to our presenters for your showing us your complex processes. And so we are at time. If you guys want to hang back, we can answer some questions, but I also realize there's some planes going off the ground right now. So yeah, thank you for coming today. We really appreciate everything. Does anyone want to ask a question? We're good? Okay. Thank you again. Thank you, Sarah and Marie.